that things had changed. Transatlantic visitors were used to being talked down to by their hosts, who drew on centuries of imperial wisdom to instruct and correct. Americans believed they had little to learn from a nation that was fast losing its world power status, and in the space of a generation had twice been forced to turn to them for salvation. Their dealings with the RAF brought a pleasant surprise. In the early autumn of 1940, when America was still more than a year away from entering the war, but already supplying Britain with materiel, a delegation toured Egypt. Colonel Harvey S. Burwell of the U.S. Army Air Forces, the USAAF, was greatly impressed by the spirit of the pilots and ground crews, praising their superb morale, extraordinary patience, and wonderful courage. He met Tedder, then head of RAF's Middle East Command, and some of his senior officers, and was relieved to find that the British supercilious superiority so objectionable to Americans is rarely exhibited. The impression persisted so that the information officer was able to state in his 1944 report from Washington that many people who dislike the British would not say a word against the RAF. This image of unstuffiness was reinforced by a well-orchestrated stateside propaganda effort promoting the RAF's achievements and personalities. Guy Gibson, hero of the May 1943 Dams Raid, was pressed into service as an ambassador. In September that year, he swept across North America, charming interviewers, reporters, and radio audiences, and receiving the sort of reception normally accorded to movie stars. Humility was not a quality readily associated with Gibson at home. Abroad, however, he was seen as a thoroughly nice, modest young man with a good sense of humour. Above all, he was unmistakably a great warrior. The Dams Raid was an epic feat of arms. It immediately attracted the attention of the Hollywood director Howard Hawks, who invited Gibson to stay with him in Los Angeles. Hawks commissioned a script from Flight Lieutenant Roald Dahl, a former fighter pilot then serving as a press attaché in Washington, though this version foundered on the objections of Barnes Wallace, the scientific brains behind the operation. The Air Force projected confidence, aggression, and efficiency. Whatever the Americans thought about Britain's contribution on land and sea, no one could deny that in the air it more than pulled its weight. The first American bombs fell on Europe in August 1942. In the 29 months that followed, the USAAF never matched the tonnages showered down by the RAF. It was only in January 1945 that they began to pull ahead. The final balance showed that in the bombing war in Europe, Bomber Command dropped 873,348 tons of ordnance, and the United States 8th Air Force 621,438. In this field of the great Allied endeavour in the West, the British were seen to deliver more and suffer more than the US in both men and machines. At the business of strategic bombing, British aircraft were the best in the world. The Avro Lancaster and the Handley Page Halifax were the same size as their American counterparts, the Boeing B-17 Flying Fortress and Consolidated B-24 Liberator. However, they carried much heavier bomb loads, 10,000 pounds against the Fortress's 5,000 pounds. So when Americans looked at the RAF, they saw an organization that did not conform to their notions of Britishness, but something more akin to themselves, matching them for ambition, efficiency, and swagger. Military forces mirror the values of the society they spring from. The image of Britain that the RAF presented in the glass was not the same as that reflected by the Army and the Navy. The old services represented the past. The airmen were the incarnation of how new Britons viewed themselves, modern, competent, democratic, and reluctant to give to those above them the automatic deference that had hitherto been expected. This picture of the RAF was widely accepted both inside and outside its ranks. As a result of the great attention paid to it by the press, the radio, and the newsreels, the Air Force came to be seen as a repository of a new set of national values. It was a development that suited the government's information strategy, and it was soon endorsed as a recurrent trope of British propaganda. The approach carried hidden risks. In it was contained an implicit promise that the ethos the RAF enshrined would be given political expression and influence the future shape and direction.